You're listening to episode 213 of Women Worldwide. Did you know that out of the 2018 Fortune 500 companies, only 24 of their CEOs are women? What does it take to get to the C-suite, and what skills do you need to get you there? I've got a guest who has a lot to share on this topic, so stay tuned to learn more. Hi, I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. I've spent an entire career helping women to share stories, nurture relationships, grow their brands, but most of all, to find their voices so they can make a difference. Do you feel stuck? Do you want to power up your own voice? Women Worldwide features the stories of passionate women who have navigated big career challenges and some of the toughest changes. These professionals offer deep insights and advice to inspire you and to help you uncover what's holding you back. Let Women Worldwide ignite your passion so you can excel in life. Welcome to another episode of Women Worldwide. Thank you for tuning into the show and for helping us to grow our network. It's your dedicated listening and all of the sharing of our guest stories that's really helped to propel us forward. And you know what? We're also hearing that the advice, the insights, and the tips, they're helping you to step out of your comfort zone and to pursue your passion too. And that's what it's all about. Let's get to today's topic. We're talking about skills, skills in business, skills if you want to get to the C level, right? C-suite. So what does it take to do this? You want to be the CEO, the CFO, or how about the Chief Operating Officer, COO? Well, that's where my guest has plenty to share today. Joining me on the show is Allison Pickens, who is the COO of Gainsight, a SaaS solution that helps B2B companies drive faster growth. When Allison joined Gainsight back in 2014, she held a lot of different roles, but she actually helped scale the company's first sales development team. There's so much I could say about Allison. She is a top woman in SaaS. She was named to one of those lists. She was named one of the top 50 people in the sales and business development industry. She's an international speaker and a blogger. And guess what? She has a podcast. She is the host of the Customer Success Podcast. So I'm not going to go on any longer. Allison, it's great to have you on my show. Welcome.
It's really great to be here. Thank you so much for including me.
Oh, you're welcome. I have been waiting for this conversation, so I'm going to dive right in. Your background is super interesting. And I always ask guests, because I'm curious to know, was there a time, you know, early in your career that you thought you would be COO at a tech company? You know, tell us a little bit about how you carved your path.
Gosh, it's hard to have anticipated the journey and adventure I've been on. And I don't think at any time I said COO is specifically what I'd like to do. But there have been a few aspects of my role that have been pretty consistent throughout my life. For example, I've always really loved organizing groups, even in middle school.
Oh, wow. That's going way back.
Movie night on Friday nights with friends was something that I really enjoyed doing. In high school, I really enjoyed leading clubs. So I was president of the athletic committee, which was actually really the spirit, the team spirit. I also led our Model UN team, co-led it in high school. And in college, I think really explored that passion for developing organizations. I started a women's leadership initiative in college, which is still around today.
Oh, that's great.
And they're doing really well. So I think organizing communities has always been something that I've been really passionate about. And today, organizing communities is a big part of my role, whether it's the internal community at our company or else the community of people in our industry that we look to work with.
So did you ever, did you just like technology? Were you drawn to technology to end up at Gainsight?
I really do enjoy technology. I get excited about the future and you know, I have watched most Star Trek Next Generation episodes. So I am a geek for sure. I'd say the other thing that drew me to tech was I've always been entrepreneurial in different ways. I like building things. I like thinking about things from scratch. And technology is an industry where you get to do that every day.
I find that too. And plus just what you said about excited about the future. Tech is all about the future. And pairing that with the fact that you love to sort of build communities, that's a great match. Let's, you know, I mentioned in the introduction, skills. You're always learning, developing. What do you think are the most important skills for a C-level position?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll start out by saying, I think C-level positions and their requirements do vary a lot by company. So I wouldn't say that my role is necessarily representative or that my advice is universal. But I do think that what's helped me is learning how to learn quickly. If you can,
oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I've always heard be curious, but not learn how to learn quickly. That's different.
Yeah. I think learning is a skill. Life doesn't always naturally teach us how to learn quickly. You know, I've always enjoyed learning. I think what taught me how to learn quickly was earlier in my career, I chose to go into management consulting at a company called BCG. And in that context, every few months, you switch projects. And those client engagements might be with clients in totally different industries. You might first work on an engagement with an infrastructure company, and then you might work on one with a retail company. And, in 3 month sprints, you might learn so many different industries, learn how to work with different people, learn how to tackle different types of problems. So, I think that was a really good boot camp for me. I later went into investing where, although you're not, switching client engagements, you are switching the opportunities that you're diligencing. And you might similarly quickly have to get up to speed on really different sectors, companies. So today, the reason that's applicable is because every day there is a different challenge or opportunity that we're focused on. And my calendar is really tight. It's very busy.
Imagine.
And I'm working on that actually. But what it means is that I have small windows of time in which I can learn. So I have to figure out how to learn as quickly as I can, as much as I can about a given challenge or opportunity so that I can make the right decisions and empower the team as best I can.
Sure. I mean, it's the flexibility of the mind. I used to, you know, I still love my own work because I have different clients. So you're constantly learning as much as you can about different industries. But, you know, as far as learning goes, do you find that you are a visual learner? Is it, you know, you have to hear things for it to sink in? Do you have to be interactive with something? Mm-hmm. What's the best way for you to learn?
Good question. I learn through dialogue. For the most part, I'm also a visual learner. So if that dialogue can take place at a whiteboard,
that
helps a lot. I learn through dialogue by asking questions and throwing ideas out there to see what sticks.
No, that's a great way. What about, you know, you did mention that there's often different challenges or problems. So I want to tackle problem solving, because I believe that that is something that goes along with the territory when you are a leader of an organization. So how much problem solving do you do, and how do you look at problem solving? Mm-hmm. How do you attack a problem?
Problem solving is probably the number one activity I do during the day. So yeah, it's a huge part of my role. I do it by trying to learn as quickly as possible about the details. I don't think that, especially nowadays, leaders can afford to be high level. I think you have to be at the level of the forest and the trees, and you have to be able to switch between the forest and the trees really quickly. So for example, we acquired a company last year. I had to learn pretty quickly, and the rest of our team did as well, about the product so that I could help bubble up the overall messaging that we have about the value of this product. And so you might be in the same conversation diving into the details of technically why is this product very scalable, and then a few minutes later you might be talking about the tagline for that product or how to construct a high level slide that all of our salespeople can use. So I think that's an important aspect of problem solving, is being able to dive deep and then surface up the most important learnings. Also, an important aspect of the way I problem solve is I like to look at patterns. For me, the way I learn is I often compare what I'm looking at with something I've seen before. And what that means is that, you know, if you can get really good at pattern recognition, you can take a couple of data points that you've seen in the past and marry that up with a new data point that's been elevated to you, and then see the connection. That type of, I think, trend recognition can help you very quickly understand new industry. A related concept I've sort of heard other people talk about, which is getting up to speed on an industry or some sort of subject that interestingly has parallels to other areas. For example, lots of leaders out there will read a lot, and they might read a book on biology and then read a book on business, and they will find connections between those two fields, which at face value initially may not seem related. But interestingly, although we don't have to get into the details of this on this call, I think it's natural that there are parallels between different fields that can help you learn.
That's fascinating. So when I step back and I listen to what you said about how you can find the parallels and kind of compare what you're looking at to something in the past, when I think about different personality types, there's two that pop into my mind: the type A and the type B. And type B tends to be able to step back and connect the dots. And type A is, you know, really high energy, running around, getting a lot of things done. Can you do what you said with your comparisons if you're a type A? Or do you have to be a type B personality to like slow down, step back, make parallels? Yeah. And I don't even know if you can answer that question, yeah, but it's kind of just popped into my mind.
It's a great question. And, you know, I'm not an expert on the difference between type A and type B. I would say I don't initially identify as purely type A. Certainly, I think people would describe me as a high energy person. Yesterday I was interviewing a candidate who said she had heard I was a force of nature. So,
oh my God. Wow, that's beyond high energy.
Yeah, so I'm pretty high energy, but I would say, I wouldn't call myself a controlling person. And I think if you talk to other people in my life, they would agree with that. That's a little hard to talk about yourself. Especially in interpersonal dynamic. My point of view does not have to be the one that's adopted. And unless, of course, you know, there are always situations where I might have a greater data set than someone I am in a disagreement with, or, you know, sometimes like, you know, you just have to make the call. But I try as much as possible to come to decisions through dialogue. And I'm for sure open to changing my mind. And I actually have changed my mind a number of times.
That's good. You have to be flexible as a leader.
Yeah.
You can't keep going down a path if it's not the right path.
That's right. Because for sure, you know, my goal is to get to the best outcome for us. It's not to make sure that my point of view is executed on. So I do think that it's important for a leader to exhibit both type A and type B behaviors. And I'd say if you're the kind of person where it always needs to be your way, I think you might run into difficulties working with other people. And the reality is today, people expect servant leaders. They expect people who are authentic and also caring about their team. And so if you're,
I love that you said
right,
that.
Like if you're perceived by your team to be someone where it's all about you, then I think you will have difficulty, getting buy-in.
Absolutely. Well, just the fact that you said, you learned quickly through listening, big word there, and you're not controlling. When you listen, typically you're not controlling and you're open to suggestions. There are controlling micromanagers who don't even take the time to listen. So your decisions through dialogue, everything that you just said makes me believe that you are not a controlling micromanager sort of person, and that you mix that A with B. And gosh, what a compliment. You force of nature, you. Right. So that's awesome. Let's talk a little bit about the team. So you have spent a great deal of your career, it seems, building teams. So you're probably surrounding yourself with a lot of dynamic, smart people. Tell us what makes up a really good team.
Great question. I love focus on teams. Takes me back to my sports days. I played lacrosse growing up.
That's cool.
Yeah. I think what's wonderful about lacrosse is the way you win is by creating this beautifully interconnected system where you might have someone who's a goalie, somebody who's a defender, somebody who is what we call like the center position, which is kind of like midfield in soccer. And, you might have someone who's on offense. And the way that you score is by very seamlessly, effortlessly passing the ball up the field to different people. And actually even sometimes back and forth between the same person in order to like quickly move the ball down the field and score. And if you watch video clips of lacrosse, you'll see actually just how much it is about the connections and not about any one person. It might be that you have someone who's in the center, but the center's job is not to be the star of the show. It's to make sure that everybody else is connected to each other. And so to me, a great team has those incredibly effortless connection points. Now, I think the opposite of that would be a team where there's or group where there's territorialism, right? There's sort of defending your turf. There's protecting information from others.
And you see a lot of this in business.
Yeah, we do. I think a successful team is not so much about the individual superstars, although certainly you can have a team, I think, of superstars as long as they are all, seamlessly connected to each other.
So would you say that when you are, so you were interviewing someone who, you know, gave you that, said you are a force of nature, could feel your high energy. As you're interviewing people or as you have interviewed people in the past, do you look for the, I'm a team player, mm-hmm. I want to be connected kind of person?
I think I instinctively do. Being vulnerable, I think I could do a better job having an objective scorecard for that, right? Like how exactly do you assess whether someone is likely to be a team player? I think there are some signals that someone can work with other people that I think I do look at. One is, do they interrupt in an interview or are they listening thoughtfully? Another would be, I do ask a number of sort of more behavioral questions, like tell me about a time when you resolved a conflict. Tell me about a time when you had to get things done with a team, when you had to get buy-in from someone who disagreed with you. So I think there's a few ways that you can understand whether someone would be focused on their connection points with other people. But But I'd say I could get better at it. I would also say that, I think there's a risk, even though I really believe in like the connections between people and how that makes great teams. I think sometimes there's a risk that if you focus so much on, relationship building skill set of a candidate, you might disqualify people who can actually make a big impact on your company. I think sometimes there is this balance between, someone who can be like a driver and get stuff done, but also have the skill set of like bringing people along. I think in leadership, actually, that challenge of like mobilizing everyone and pushing the team ahead and also making sure that they're excited participants. To me, that is the greatest challenge that leaders have. And you see leaders on either end of the spectrum. Sometimes, they might be a little conflict averse. And so they may not be willing to paint a vision and enable change. Because even for leaders, change can be scary and risky. And then you might have leaders on the other end of the spectrum who are so keen on driving, their vision might be rejected by the team because the team doesn't feel bought in. So I think, finding the balance between those two things, in yourself and also in the people that you interview is important.
Yeah, that's a great point. Finding the balance. Allison, I'm going to ask you just to hold your thoughts for a moment. We're going to go to a super quick break, give some love to our sponsor. And when we get back, Allison's going to share some of her most memorable lessons in business.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communications and innovative technology. Yesterday's techniques won't work. Today, you have an opportunity to expand your communications approach with fresh, creative, and effective ways to power up your brand voice through new channels and to interact with more value and meaning. Pure Performance Communications will work with you to move audiences from awareness to action and impact. You'll foster greater engagement and forge stronger relationships along the way. Let us help you uncover what's holding you back and help you to carve out a marketing and PR roadmap to success. Visit us at pureperformancecom.com. That's pureperformancecom with two M's.com. Now back to Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge.
Welcome back to the show. Allison Pickens and I were discussing the skills you need when you want to get to the C-suite. All right, so Allison, we were talking all about the skills, the balance. It was really interesting what you were saying. And speaking of skills, let's talk a little bit about being tech savvy. So this is always such a fun question to tackle with leaders. Do you see yourself as tech savvy at a tech company? And maybe how much technology is a part of your day at work, maybe personally, on social media?
Mm-hmm. Great question. Certainly, it's part of my job to understand the products that we sell. And I think that's important in any business is to really understand what you sell. At the same time, I would say that, in terms of the tools that I use for my professional and personal life to like get things done or do other things, I wouldn't call myself an early adopter. And I think the reason for that is because to me, technology should exist, to enable people. And I won't adopt a technology unless I see a clear path to it making my life better in some way. And I would say that not all technology does that. Of course, there's a lot of discussion today right. about people being distracted by technology. I think one thing that's just so ironic to me is that there are now mobile apps for meditation. When actually the reason why people might meditate more is because their mind is so frazzled by that same phone.
Exactly. That's so funny that you said that. I mean, look not at where
to,
we are today.
Not to be critical of these apps. I'm sure that I think a lot of people actually benefit from them. But to me, I don't instinctively look for an app when I have a challenge. I think more from first principles about a problem that I have and how to solve it. Like for me, the best way to get sort of regrounded, in myself, my relationships, sort of uncover or think like sort of process thoughts is going for like a 4 or 5 hour hike on a weekend. And for, you know, fortunately in the Bay Area, we have, you know, lots of hiking trails that are accessible, for the most part year round. And, so my Saturdays are mostly spent, hiking. And, for me, that like, that's what help clears my head.
Well, I hear that being outdoors, connecting to nature, it's probably the best thing that you can do for your mind as well as your heart. It's just so good for you. I don't have a stat on that, but I'm still laughing about the comment that you made that it's almost like we need a break from technology. So we're choosing technology in a meditation app. That is fascinating. What about social media? Do you connect with family and friends? Do you see it as an opportunity? Is it a necessary evil for you professionally?
I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. I find it helpful. It is one of those products that I think it does make things easier for me. And specifically, it helps me share content. As I think you mentioned at the start of the call, I'm a relatively prolific writer. You know, we have a podcast, and so it's a helpful way to share. I think people seem to appreciate it, and it's a good way for me to stay connected with people who I work with in a variety of capacities in my professional life. So, and I also just think LinkedIn's super easy to use. It's probably, apart from Gmail, it's probably the app that I use most commonly. I'm often on it on my phone or on my desktop. You know, in terms of other social media, I can't say that I am an avid user. I find other ways of, you know, connecting with people in my personal life to be more fulfilling.
That's good. I mean, I always think that being in person is probably the most fulfilling for me. I will say that LinkedIn, and, you know, of course, I have to share that I'm a LinkedIn Learning author or instructor. So this might be a little bit biased, but yeah, I think LinkedIn is just so easy. And if you want good professional connections, that is the place to be. And I also share Women Worldwide on LinkedIn too. So, you know, as you clearly mentioned first segment about learning, learning fast. So what can you tell listeners that you've learned about yourself as you've sort of gone down this career path? Anything surprising?
Great question. I think I'm learning about myself all the time. I think I've learned that I can persevere, which I do think is a really important determinant of success. Just showing up at the start of the day, right? Like after things are tough, I think that's probably true in life too, is you might have a bad day, but if you just show up the next day and give it your best effort, and even if you can't in the moment give it your best effort, just getting through the day is sometimes a win. So I think I have learned, that I can persist even in those tough times. I think I've also learned that, other people's styles are not necessarily best for me. I think earlier in life, even sometimes today for sure, I look at people who I really admire, and I sometimes am tempted to sort of adopt some of their behaviors, right? Like you know, like the way that someone speaks, or the way that they run a meeting, the way that they structure their day, interact with other people. When I see someone who I admire, I find their actions very inspiring. And so I think historically my first instinct has been to try to be like them. And, I found that doesn't always work for me. And, you know, there's a reason, right? Like they've optimized their style for their personality and their passions. And, I've learned a bit that, that doesn't always work for me. For example, you know, my manager, Nick Maida, who's our CEO, someone I greatly admire. And, I've learned that, you know, his ability to like multitask and switch between tasks in rapid fire throughout the day is, probably unparalleled. I've never met someone who's better at that than Nick. That is not one of my core skills. I'd say like I'm I'm pretty good. Like, my day is mostly 30-minute meetings back to back. But I really benefit from having time that's completely unstructured, when I can process, think deeply about a challenge, absorb everything that I've heard over the course of the day, and then make sense of it. Have unstructured time with people to just catch up and hear if things are going. So one of the things I'm working on right now is how to structure my day more effectively so that it brings out the best in me.
That's wonderful to hear, because I think what this speaks to is understanding yourself and taking a moment to step back to say, this is who I am, bringing your authentic self to the table, or, to work every single day. And then you're able to pick up what works best, because there are so many people, Allison, out there who can inspire us, and they're all different, and they have different tips and insights. But at the end of the day, you really have to know who you are. Otherwise, you're just chasing different methods down rabbit holes, and it's not going to work. So yeah, you have to be in tune with yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah. The other point that you made that I think, I don't know, I hope listeners really take it to heart, is that when you have a bad day, just showing up, like, that means something. That you, I don't know if professionals think that you have to show up and everything's going to be great and you're going to change the world that day. And if you don't, then don't show up. That's too black and white thinking. That just the fact, it is a small win if you go in and you take that step forward. And that's a really good quality.
I definitely think it is. Sometimes it's just the small act of moving forward that ends up ensuring you're on the right trajectory.
Absolutely. So what about, because you mentioned that sometimes you have bad days, let's talk about learning moments, but we'll start with the good. Can you share an aha moment? So that's a really good moment. And then maybe, which isn't so good.
An aha moment.
That should be an easy one.
And by aha, you mean like something great that happened?
Yeah, where you said, either I didn't expect this to happen, or this is so great, or this feels so good as I'm going down my career path. That just stands out in your mind.
One aha moment, which actually has happened, I think, a couple times in the past few years, is there have been a few public forums where I have shared a very personal story about myself. Sometimes a challenge that I had to overcome, or sort of something I worked on in myself. And I've been really nervous about sharing it, because I think I have some fear about sharing weakness or seeming perhaps like imperfect, which for sure I am. And in those moments when I've shared those things, folks have been extremely supportive and appreciative. I'll share a couple examples. About a year ago, we had our annual community conference, which we call the Pulse Conference. And I shared about how when I was very young, I was very shy in elementary school, and how I was able to overcome shyness and learn to fully express myself through middle school and high school with the support of my mom, and also a new community that I joined. And the sort of theme of the speech was being brave. And, so many people reached out after me after that and said, like, I can totally relate, and it might've been that they were also shy growing up, but it might've been that, even today, many of us, probably most of us, wonder whether we can really take that risk or put ourselves out there or fully express ourselves. And I think that's why, the message of being brave really resonated with people in that moment. So actually there were so many responses. Some of them actually talked about a sickness that they overcame, like a health issue that they overcame. Some people talked about, a whistleblower situation that they were in, and like how much courage it took for them to blow that whistle. Some people talked about, a terrible accident that they had and how they used that accident as an opportunity to help other people who had undergone, similar trauma. And, the story that I shared seems like kind of very small by comparison. So,
what it brought out.
Exactly. Yeah. So
that's wonderful.
What it taught me was that even sharing a small story, can open you up in a way that invites other people to share even more powerful stories and, that feels incredible to me.
Yeah, vulnerability can be viral in a good way, because those are all, whether it's the smallest or the largest story that you're going to share, just the fact that you can be so human is a wonderful quality. And I think that truly speaks to being a leader when you can do that. So Allison, with everything that you've said and all of these learning moments, what is your definition for success? How do you see success end of day, and what is success in long term?
I gave some thought to this, especially last year. We were in a workshop led by a leadership coach on my team. We were talking about the legacy that we want to leave behind. And I gave some thought to it. And actually, it was pretty straightforward for me, which is I want to have deep, at the end of the day, I want to have deep relationships that have created meaning for me and other people. I would like to follow my values, and I would like to build communities of people that inspire them. And honestly, if I'm able to do that in a meaningful way in my lifetime, then I think I will have been successful.
Oh my gosh, that's short term, that's long term. I love that answer, because I believe, and this, I just remember when Bob Berg was on the show and he talked about his Go Giver series. There's, we're here to serve. Right? So there has to be value, the people you're serving, but at the same time, in the relationship that you're developing, it's meaningful for you too. So that sort of speaks to that, those deep relationships are really the connections, the value, and staying true to your values. That's so important too. Allison, do you think you can offer some advice to our Women Worldwide listeners, maybe who are growing their businesses or even about their own professional growth?
I'd say in a nutshell, be brave, because you might be braver than you think you are.
That's true. Sometimes we don't give ourselves enough credit. So awesome. Awesome point. Okay. Last question. It is super easy. Where can people find out more about you and your work?
Sure. Going back to our conversation earlier, going to LinkedIn, is probably an effective way. I tend to publish a lot there, and, you can see sort of past articles I've written. Obviously you can also go to, gainsight.com, where you can see, my blog and blog posts written by other people at our company as well.
Excellent. Allison, thank you so much for taking the time to be on Women Worldwide. We appreciate your advice, your insights, and all the skills you shared in your personal journey, how you got to the C-level. So thank you.
Thank you so much for hosting me, Deirdre. This was a lot of fun.
You're welcome. And I also want to thank all of you for tuning into Women Worldwide. You're helping to grow our network. You're sharing the stories and you're telling us how you feel. We love that so much. So keep the feedback coming. iTunes, rate us. Facebook, Twitter, give us a shout out. We always love hearing from you. And you can also sign up now for email updates on the Women Worldwide website, womenworldwideshow.com. So you can go there too. All right, friends, until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.